As Christmas approaches, I'm continuing my yearly tradition of reviewing Christmas films, but this year I'm looking at them through the lens of urgent care. This time I've chosen a film that might not seem to be a Christmas film, but for me, it is, and that film is Iron Man 3. I don't think a Christmas film has to be about Christmas. Being set at Christmas is enough for me to trigger thoughts of Christmas. Seeing decorations and hearing carols can evoke the feelings associated with the Christmas holidays, and then the rest of the story can happen around that underlying feeling. And this is true of Iron Man 3. But the reason it's on my list of urgent care CPD Christmas films is because it demonstrates a condition that we might well see over the holiday period, and something I think it worth talking about. And to talk about this, and about Christmas in general, I'm going to call Dr. Caitlin Randalls, an urgent care fellow, currently based in Auckland, but who's originally from the UK.
Hello.
Hey, is that Caitlin?
Yes, speaking.
Caitlin, it's Guy Melrose. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Guy. How are you doing?
Not too bad. It's that time of year. It's that busy Christmas period. And I've just been sitting at home reflecting on the year just gone and thinking about Christmas coming up. And I just thought I've been phoning around a few urgent care colleagues to chat about urgent care and Christmas and the holiday period. Mm-hmm. So are you free for a chat?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to speak about the holiday period.
So what's up for you at Christmas? Are you working this Christmas? Do you have Christmas off?
Actually, Guy, this is the first Christmas in 5 years that I've not been working. So I'm quite excited this year.
As you know,
from the UK. Pardon?
So you can have a proper Christmas.
Proper Christmas. Well, yeah, I mean, as I'm from the UK, I've felt like working Christmas Day is not necessarily much of a sacrifice. You know, I haven't got my close friends and family here. I have my partner Hugh here. So I've always felt like actually if other people can spend Christmas with their family and I'm working the day, then that's not, you know, it's not too much of a big deal for me. But actually, I've really enjoyed working Christmas Day here. You get that magical feeling and where everyone's in a good mood, both staff and patients alike. And you have that kind of shared experience with people that you work with, which is usually reserved for family and friends. So it's quite a nice feeling being at work on that day. And it's quite interesting to see what comes in on the day as well. There's often Christmas-related injuries, kids swallowing things or cutting your scissors with whilst you're wrapping your presents, you know. So it is quite a nice feeling at work on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I was chatting with a few other people about this, and we definitely noticed that the Christmas Day holiday working is different to some of the other like New Year's Day or some of the other holidays throughout the year, in that people are generally a little bit more they're a bit more reluctant to come in unless there's a real problem. So obviously they've all got more important things to do, and everybody who's working is appreciative of the fact that you're there. So there's this kind of camaraderie and Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
And then in the afternoon, that's when the uncles break their wrists falling off their nephew's skateboard, or people trying to, as you say, use new equipment and stabbing themselves or swallowing something or whatever. And so you get that kind of range of slightly interesting things coming in. So I've always enjoyed Christmas, the actual Christmas day working. How about the rest of the holidays? The Christmas holidays, do you find working over them is tiring, difficult? How do you find the rest of the days?
Yeah, it's interesting here because everybody seems to take a Christmas break. You know how the GP practices are closed and lots of businesses close and people kind of leave Auckland, and we work through an urgent care, don't we? So it does become for us a much busier time compared to other people. So you do have that feeling of, you know, carrying on and pushing through whilst other people are having a bit of a break and a holiday. And, you know, it's good and it's challenging to see GP presentations that we wouldn't usually see. So, you know, it's good to think outside of our usual scope of practice. But I do find that period of time, like 2 weeks, can be very busy and often quite looking forward to the GP practices opening again by the end of it. So, yeah.
And it's one of the benefits of being down under for Christmas is that we have a warm Christmas here, which I find everybody wants to go off to the beach. Or which actually, where I live in Hamilton, a lot of people leave. So we, in a way, we actually get a little bit quieter over Christmas because everyone goes off to nice beachside resorts for their Christmas period. But everyone wants to go off and have a sunny kind of holiday, whereas back home, it's cold and wintry and it's dark by 3:30 and it's very different. So how do you find a warm Christmas? Or how did you find adapting to having a warm Christmas?
Oh, it's taken me a good few years to adapt, and I would still see it feel like it doesn't really feel like Christmas to me here. Like it's the 14th of December now, and it could be, you know, any month of the year in my mind. But I also don't really have all my family around me that helps, I guess, with the Christmas feeling. But I definitely, that feeling of being wrapped up inside on a cold winter's day and the fire's on and all the Christmas music's on and it's dark in the evenings, that definitely adds to the excitement of Christmas and how I associate with Christmas. But then that said, you know, now I also really enjoy watching the Pūtekaua start to bloom and the red, you know, New Zealand Christmas tree. And the kind of excitement around going to the beach and having barbecues. So I've got a new type of Christmas feeling here in New Zealand now as well. So I feel quite lucky to be able to appreciate both. But certainly if you were to ask me which one I preferred, I think I would say, even though the reality of the UK Christmas is, you know, you think it's a nice snowy Christmas, but it's usually just raining and really cold.
It always makes me laugh still. when you think of, I sometimes think of Bridget Jones and or the film of Bridget Jones and the when Bridget's walking up to the house and it's all snow on the hills and in the streets and everyone's wearing their Christmas jerseys and drinking mulled wine and everything. Some of that's correct. We all huddle indoors with an open fire, but if there is anything, it's slush. It's never nice pantry snow, and it's not quite the Christmas card kind of picture perfect thing, is it? But it is a bit weird when you start sort of realizing that Santa's outfit is not best suited for this climate, and you know, there's little things that they do differently, isn't there? Which and it's interesting you mentioned family. I think my favorite Christmas I've had down here was the Christmas when my parents-in-law were over and my sister and brother-in-law were over, and I think that addition of family definitely helps to bring that sort of cohesion of what Christmas is all about. Because do you ever do the so-called midwinter Christmas? So the Christmas down under when it's cold? And
I haven't. We talked about it. We've never actually got around to doing it. But no, have you done that?
No, we mention it, but then it kind of middle of winter just doesn't quite seem that special. And yet I think that's one of the nice things about Christmas in the Northern Hemisphere, is that it is at the depths of winter. It's cold and miserable, and so suddenly there's this festival of food and drink and parties and lights and stuff, and so I think that's the difference, is that
definitely
it just peps everybody up.
And it's a thing to look forward to, isn't it? There's not much else to look forward to at that time of year, and when you hit January, February in the UK, it does get a bit grim. But you know, from September through till because it kind of, the run-up is so big in the UK as well compared to here, you know, from about Halloween time onwards, it feels like it's a big build-up to Christmas. So you get that kind of crescendo up until day, and that adds to the anticipation, I guess. Compared to here, where like I say, I wouldn't have known it was Christmas until, you know, next week it's coming up. So
It definitely does have quite a long lead out, which has good and bad things. Although I still maintain Christmas carols have to start in December. Anything before December feels wrong. And do you have any special kind of things that you associate with the British Christmas versus, like you mentioned, the Kiwi kind of beach and Pohutukawas and everything. But what would you say was quintessential about a British Christmas for you?
What I really miss is the British pubs. They are just that kind of traditional, cozy feeling, and they're so quaint. And yeah, if you get a good UK pub, you can't really beat it. And usually, because me and my partner are both from the same area in Manchester, and all of our friends come back for that, you know, Christmas Eve, night before Christmas feeling is really nice. And we don't really have the same feeling in a pub here that you do in the UK. So that would probably be my thing that I would say is what I miss the most.
I fully agree, fully concur. We got married at Christmas because we liked it made sense that if you can't control the weather, you may as well prepare for a cold kind of wedding. You may as well prepare for bad weather. And so we got married on just after Christmas. So the church had Christmas decorations up already. So it kind of all felt nice. But it was actually not far from Manchester. We were in the Forest of Bowland, just north of Manchester.
Oh, no way.
And the pub next door where we stayed had all the rooms had fires in them, and all the, you know, the pub bits had open fires and real ale and mulled wine. And it was there's nothing nicer than sitting in a British pub with the fire on, coming in from the cold, having been out for a nice walk, and you've got a rosy cheeks and everything.
Yeah,
just feels like it needs to warm up and defrost by the fire. And I definitely agree that a British pub is something that you can't really replicate down here, particularly in the summer months. It just doesn't quite feel the same.
But, totally agree.
And I mentioned actually just before the Bridget Jones, which I guess is what a lot of people might think a British Christmas is like. Colin Firth in a funny jumper, and aunties and uncles coming around and, you know, eating and drinking too much. And films, I think, definitely make Christmas feel more Christmassy for me. I always remember the Radio Times when that used to come out for the Christmas season, and you'd go through and look at what films were coming on, and you'd circle them and decide, oh great, this film's on and this film's on. And and films for me, like The Snowman, that was on every single Christmas, was always like a must watch thing to really kind of, it almost like triggers the this is now Christmas, this is how it started now. So do you have any Christmas films that you would say, if you saw them on the television or if you put them on, would sort of start to trigger those receptors that acknowledge Christmas?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably choose Home Alone 1 as one of my favorites. I think remembering watching that maybe age 6 or 7, and that kind of novelty of imagining being at home alone, and the Americanized Christmas is quite fun to watch in the snow, and it's quite a silly film as well, and you can kind of watch it again and again, it doesn't really get old. I really enjoyed that film.
I read a very interesting thing just in the last week, I think it was in the paper. Apparently the house from Home Alone is available to rent on Airbnb.
Oh my goodness.
So could you imagine having
that's next Christmas sorted?
Exactly. Can you imagine renting that house for Christmas Day? Because it was a huge house, and all the trees and all the lights. And I agree. It definitely feels Christmassy when you put the music, particularly the John Williams music, that kind of just makes you think. Even though there's obviously some criminal elements in Home Alone, isn't there, when the people are trying to break in, it still feels Christmassy and lighthearted, and it is every kid's fantasy to kind of be home alone and making traps and things. And I agree, it's very much a Christmas classic.
Yeah.
Any other films?
I guess Christmas is all about children, isn't it, as well, and being a child and imagining Santa, and that's why I quite like that film, is it kind of takes me back to that part, that phase of my life, you know, being looking forward to Christmas in that with that child childlike excitement. So
yeah, definitely, because it is a film that's you see through the eyes of Macaulay Culkin, don't you? So and watching it now, you sort of do get transported back to being that age again. So any other films that you would put on that would...
I always loved Love Actually as a classic. I know that you might have spoken
about
Sorrell's it, but to be honest with you, Guy, I don't think it's aged that well.
Really?
My sister pointed out a few points. I think some of the dynamics between the relationships in it are a bit questionable. And now that my sister's pointed out a few things in it, you know, how is it Hugh Grant and his secretary? It's a bit dodgy. I don't know. I think... In 10 years' time, we'll look back on it and think, oh, it's not aged that well. But I guess that's just a film of its time, maybe. But still, it's still, you know, it's still a feel-good film, and it's very funny, and it's very British in lots of ways as well. So,
it does have a certain Britishness to it, which, again, helps with that, you know, reminding us of Christmas and that feeling of Christmas. And I like the way they do weave different stories together, and everybody's coming home for Christmas, and that, you know,
that's true.
That kind of going home for Christmas motif is definitely something that you appreciate when you're the other side of the world from friends and family.
Music as well.
I can see the albums are good. Rabsy Nesbitt, I always forget his name, the actor's name, but I just always think of him as Rabsy Nesbitt, along with Bill Nye.
Is it Bill Nye?
Well, Bill Nye is the actor, musician who's doing the rock star, and then his manager and best mate, the Scottish guy, played Rabsy Nesbitt. And that relationship, as you sort of see the kind of celebrity veneer falling off, and then actually they realise that they're just mates, and that Christmas is about being together. I quite like that story, and then as much as it's not a nice story, you can't fault the Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman. That story is just class acting.
It's heartbreaking.
And I think that's why it works. It's a bit like The Four Weddings and a Funeral. It works because it's funny, but then they mix in the sadness as well. And so overall, you remember it as a funny film, but they managed to weave in the kind of a lot of very British humour as well, which we obviously appreciate. But it's the way they there is that very kind of heartbreaking story of Emma Thompson and the necklace and everything. I should actually watch it again. I've seen it on like available on one of the streaming services, so I should probably watch it, because Dave Sorrell, I chatted to him about his favorite films, and it was one of his, and I mentioned that I saw it first in Prague at Christmas time.
Oh wow.
We were there for the Christmas markets and wandered in, and there was this whole section that was done with Colin Firth and his girlfriend, who was Italian, I think. And so they had subtitles for that, for the Italian, in Czech, which I couldn't read. So, and there was this whole portion of the film I didn't understand until we watched it again about a year later.
Oh, really?
I'm like, oh, right, now I understand why. That's funny. But yeah, so Dave, you're in good company there, because Dave likes that film. It reminds him of Christmas. Now I'm going to throw you a curveball here. Iron Man 3, I think, is a Christmas film. In the same way as Die Hard's a Christmas film, because there are Christmas messages in there. If you look deep enough, and obviously it is set at Christmas, and there's one scene when Tony Stark gives Gwyneth Paltrow a huge rabbit as a present. So there's definitely gifts of Christmas, and I think there's a scene towards the end when Tony Stark is with the War Machine character, Don Cheadle's character, and all the other suits come along, and he goes, "Happy Christmas," because the suits come to save them and get them out of a bind. So there's Christmas references throughout there. So have you ever considered Iron Man as a Christmas film?
I haven't, to be honest with you, but I think that a Christmas film can be whatever you want it to be. And if that's what reminds you of Christmas, and you see the you can see the Christmas messages in there, then yeah, fine.
Because Die Hard's the film that does it for me, because it has Christmas, it's set at Christmas and there's Christmas music, and I always would watch it at Christmas. And so Iron Man's came along a little bit later, so I maybe am a little less impressionable, but I still think it's nice to watch at Christmas time, because again, you see the lights and the snow, and it's a Northern Hemisphere Christmas.
Yeah.
But I would consider it a Christmas film. And when I was rewatching it the other day, I thought of your talk that you gave at the boot camp this year, because for those people who didn't come to our boot camp, Caitlin did a really good talk on insomnia, and watching Iron Man 3, there's actually an insomnia storyline that runs through the film. And I thought, I always like trying to extract urgent care related CPD opportunities from films or books or television or whatever. And it got me thinking that there's quite an interesting kind of subtext of insomnia here, that that if you look into it, it actually is something we might see over Christmas. And I think it's encapsulated when you watch the trailer, because the trailer for the film opens up with these lines: "I'm Tony Stark, and I build neat stuff, and I've got a great girl, and occasionally I save the world. So why can't I sleep?" And so we've got this man who's a billionaire. He's a kind of an Elon Musk, or some kind of successful playboy billionaire who's got now settled down with a nice girlfriend or wife in Gwyneth Paltrow, and is part of the Avengers and has just saved the world from an alien invasion, and everybody loves him. And yet he struggles for a good portion of the film being unable to sleep, and he throws himself into his work and basically just builds a load of stuff. And there's a good scene when he eventually breaks down to Gwyneth Paltrow and says, you know, "I'm a mess and I need help." I kind of thought at Christmas time, particularly, you've mentioned before, we're both a long way from our extended family. We've got some people around us, partners and whatever, but we're our main body of the family's a long way away, and there may be people over Christmas who are feeling a bit down and a bit low, and insomnia might be a presenting complaint. And over Christmas again, GPs might be closed, so they might come to urgent care. So is that something you would envisage seeing, and how would you have to use that in an urgent care setting to pick up on somebody who might be a bit like Tony Stark?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really does kind of depict how insomnia is quite a multifactorial condition. And when you're taking a history for insomnia, we need to have these secondary causes in our minds and be able to screen for them. And depression, anxiety being a huge contributor to the prevalence of insomnia. There was a study that was done in Auckland, and it interviewed over 1,000 patients, and they found up to 50% of patients presenting with insomnia had coexisting depression, anxiety. So yeah, it's really important to make sure you're asking those questions about mood, about anxiety, about possible triggers for the insomnia, because that will probably guide your management and what you'll recommend for the patient as well. And like you said, over the Christmas period, and we've just come through 3 months of an unprecedented lockdown in Auckland, I'm sure we already are seeing, I think, an increase in people with mood problems related to that, and that will probably increase when the GP practice is shut. So we need to be kind of prepared and know what we need to be documenting and what we need to be screening for in terms of red flags, suicide, self-harm, and how it might be, you know, that, like you say, the presenting complaint might just be I can't sleep. And so it's our job to kind of unravel what could be the underlying cause.
And the type of person who gets insomnia, you would say is not, you couldn't categorize them as any one particular group, or you can have your Tony Stark, successful, rich, apparently very in a good place, but if Tony can suffer with insomnia, then anybody can. There isn't really a group who's immune to insomnia. Is that true?
I would say it can affect anyone, and I think there will be certain groups of people that would be more prone to it than others, particularly if you have a background of anxiety or low mood. And there's a kind of a chicken and egg situation there. You know, if you're not sleeping very well, then that predisposes you to mood problems and vice versa. So it can be difficult to know what's causing the other. But certainly patients as well who might be socially isolated, elderly patients. Obviously Christmas is a time for seeing family and friends, and if you're someone who potentially doesn't have that social network, that might exacerbate your symptoms as well. So just being aware of our vulnerable groups as well. But then again, through COVID, if people have lost their jobs or there's been financial insecurity, all this uncertainty at the moment, I think this is going to be quite widespread across a lot of different groups of patients. So I guess it's just knowing how these people might present and knowing how to support them through the Christmas period. Yeah.
And when you say how to support them, what can we do in urgent care? We don't have any prior relationship. We don't have any prior notes in a lot of cases. These people might even not be from our area. They may have travelled for the holidays. And what I guess we're going to be busy, as we've alluded to anyway. So our waiting rooms are going to be full, and there's going to be a pressure to maybe want to treat these people really quickly. So what are the best things we should do? And is, as a follow-on from that, is drugs an option? And when should we resist the temptation to reach for a prescription pad versus actually going that little bit further?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think that in a busy urgent care environment, it can be quite challenging. But my approach always, when I see that I have a patient that's coming in with a mood problem or a sleep problem, is I know that this person's going to take a bit more time, and being okay with that. If the triage system is working well, then we should be able to spend a bit more time with these patients. Obviously, there are certain presentations that we can potentially be a bit more time efficient, you know, a simple injury or an impetigo that might need a prescription and not much more counseling. But I think knowing that we're going to need to take a bit more time with this patient in the first instance, rather than having that rushed mentality, is really important. I think we often underestimate the role of just the therapeutic doctor-patient relationship, and even just having that conversation with the patient about what's going on with them can be really beneficial for them. And sometimes it can be just, you know, reassurance or reflecting back to them what's been going on. Or, you know, we talked about already trying to assess if there's an underlying mood problem or anxiety problem that we can detect and potentially signpost them to online resources. I think it's important not to jump to medications. It's important, even if that might be the quickest option in our minds, and we might feel pressure because it's a busy environment. But I think often the patient isn't always expecting that as the first instance anyway. And most of the time people are looking for a more holistic approach to their presentation. So I would divide it into what we usually do, which is non-pharmacological and pharmacological, and talking through if sleep as an example. Sleep hygiene is really important, and that does take time, talking through their sleep routine, things that they can be avoiding, like caffeine, alcohol, blue screens, and then things to add in like meditation, relaxation. And obviously it's about identifying where the patient's at, what they've tried before, what they might not have tried. And this will all take a bit of time. And then lastly, if medication is needed, which I think if you've seen the patient, you've excluded red flags, decided that this patient might have primary insomnia, meaning that there isn't any other medical condition like sleep apnea or chronic pain contributing to their sleep problem, and this person's not slept for a whole week, you know, they're in an urgent need for something, some help, I think that would be an appropriate patient to prescribe something short term, so long as they're aware of you know, the side effects and risks involved of things like sulfaclone or benzodiazepine, and making sure that you're counseling the patient that it's for the shortest amount of time at the lowest possible dose and that it's not a long-term option for them. I think that would be an appropriate scenario to offer something for the short term to get them through to see their GP in the new year. And that's not necessarily us succumbing to pressure necessarily. That would be an appropriate intervention at that point.
Yeah, and you took the time to get to that point. And I think the point that you made, that the it doesn't really matter how busy the waiting room is, that patient deserves the same amount of time regardless. There could be nobody waiting or there could be 100 people waiting. It doesn't change their biochemistry or the pathology of their condition just by having a bigger waiting room. And I think the actually I can reflect back a little bit onto Christmas back home. I always used to enjoy the I mentioned the Christmas television and the various things that used to get reshown, and I always enjoyed watching Parkinson, you know, the talk show hosted by Michael Parkinson. And I remember an interview that this line sticks in my head with I can't remember if he was at that point the leader of the Conservative Party or whether he was but William Hague, who became famous for, I think, making a speech when he was like a teenager at some conference or whatever, and never really seemed to change after that. He was one of those people who seemed to age, be as old as he was when he was a teenager. But he was on Parkinson, and he was telling the story of when he went to visit a farmer in Yorkshire, walked up the driveway to this farmhouse, and the farmer answered the door and he said, "Oh, that's a very long driveway." And the farmer had said to him in reply, "Well, if it was any shorter, it wouldn't reach." And not only is that a very typical Yorkshire kind of response, and but it actually, to me, always says that the driveway is as long as it needs to be to get you where you need to go. And therefore, in the same way, a consultation has to be as long as it needs to be to get you to where you need to go. And there's no skimping, and there shouldn't be any cutting corners. You certainly shouldn't waste time, so you shouldn't go round in circles. But a consultation has to be as long as it needs to be. And I think one of the best tips I've always had is when you pick up the board and you see the triage says insomnia or low mood or something where you think, oh, this might take a little bit of time, then you tell your colleagues who you're on with, hey, just to let you know, I might be a little bit of time, and then everyone can kind of manage around that. So jumping in to the prescription pad or skipping things, you're going to miss things and make mistakes. So it's very important to think that, and that brings me on to my next question. That from that decision now that you've made to talk about sleep hygiene and to maybe prescribe a short course of treatment or maybe not, but we've mentioned how GPs are often closed over Christmas. So what then happens if their GP is not around for another week or two? Is it ever appropriate in an urgent care setting to follow up these patients over Christmas, do you think? Because you don't want to leave them without any support, but then if their GP isn't available for the standard please see your GP next week follow up, do you maybe give them a phone call, or do you arrange them to pop back and see you on the floor the following week, or how do you approach that in that Christmas period?
I think for me it will depend on the level of risk that I have decided that is present with the patient. You know, if they are in that kind of middle risk category, so they're not severe enough for us to discuss with crisis team, you know, and need urgent follow-up, but they're not mild symptoms that can wait for, you know, a month to see their GP, then I guess because this Christmas period is such a unique time, and there isn't that usual safety net of the GP practices that are there to follow these patients up, then it might be appropriate to give the patient a call to check in to see how they're doing. I think the problem with bringing patients back, what I find in our clinics, is that our workforce is quite fluid, and I certainly work across different clinics, and it can be a bit unpredictable, and I might get moved from clinic to clinic, so we can't book appointments in urgent care, which is, you know, one of the challenges if we want to follow people up. And that's why, you know, GPs are more equipped for follow up, because you can book an appointment and see the same person again, and that person knows you and knows your background. And that's why these presentations should have GP follow up formally. But like you say, if someone's come in and they've got, you know, quite low mood, we don't want to start them on any medications, but we just want to implement some lifestyle modifications. Potentially we might offer them something for their sleep, and we just want to check in to see how they're doing next week rather than bringing them back to the clinic. I think a phone call would be reasonable, and you can do that from any clinic. You don't have to do that from the clinic that they were in originally. So yeah, hopefully it won't be too long as well, because it's about, they're shut for about 2 weeks, aren't they, I think, the GP practices. So yeah. I think that would be appropriate.
It's one of those situations where Christmas just changes things that little bit. You know, people are traveling, so they're away from home, so they might forget meds. And certainly, you know, it isn't unusual for people to come in saying, I left my sleeping tablets at home. Can you prescribe something from an urgent care setting? And that's sometimes a genuine thing, but we also have to have our sort of feelers out for whether or not that's a drug-seeking action by somebody who's utilising that uniqueness of Christmas and that holiday period. But yeah, the fact that people travel and they're staying in other places that aren't typical to them, and then the social dynamics that change, and then there's all the food and drink, and certainly drink can affect sleep and mood and other things, and even food, I guess. There's people talk about falling asleep after a big meal, and so maybe people just need to eat more turkey over Christmas and get all that tryptophan and fall, maybe that solves insomnia.
Unless they get reflux.
Well, exactly, yes, and they're up all night. Yeah. So yeah, Christmas is that kind of unique period, and you've touched on it at the beginning. It's a family thing. It's a kind of a community pickup. To get the whole community feeling a bit happier, certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, about the long, dark winter. And it is a unique time, and I guess it's something that we have to consider at Christmas in an urgent care setting, that we be a little bit more aware of that uniqueness when people are presenting with certain things and when we're treating people with certain things. And so if people see insomnia, I think it would be a good way to summarize this conversation to say, be aware of it in anybody, and make sure we screen for underlying depression or underlying causes that need treatment, and to give the patient the time to actually hear what's going on and to talk to them and to come up with a proper management plan. Don't feel rushed just because of the time of year. And it shouldn't be a difficult consultation. It might just be a longer consultation. And I think people sometimes think it's difficult because they're trying to squeeze 40 minutes into 10. Well, if it takes 40 minutes, it takes 40 minutes, because, you know, the driveway needs to be as long as it needs to be. Anything to add?
And that's one of the advantages of urgent care, I find, is that if I feel that the patient needs a bit more time, I can do that. Whereas, you know, in GP land, I have not worked in GP land, but I can't imagine having back-to-back appointments and having a patient that takes more than the allotted appointment time. That must be so stressful, you know? And I think we're quite lucky that we can sit down and not have to worry necessarily. I know this might be, you know, the queue might be building up, which is its own stress, but, you know, you don't have that same appointment pressure.
But you tell your friends helpful. And you say, your colleagues, and you say, I'm going to be maybe a little bit delayed, and then they know, and you trust in the triage nurse and the triage system to pick up anybody who needs, you know, who's really sick, and they'll always knock on the door and say, you know, can you come and see this person who's very unwell? And if you trust in that system and trust in your colleagues, then you just focus on your patient and you'll give them what they need. And as you say, a lot of the time it's talking and letting them talk and letting them feel listened is a great place to start. And that's a lot of the treatment is listening to them. So don't feel pressured over Christmas is definitely true for anything. You know, you shouldn't rush stitching somebody up. You know, if it takes half an hour to stitch a wound, that's how long it takes. You know, you can't you can't rush removing a foreign object from an eye if it's difficult. Or, you know, the analogy just carries on throughout. So we shouldn't feel pressured. So So with that, thank you for your Christmas insight into insomnia, and it's been interesting to hear your Christmases, your Northern Hemisphere Christmases versus Southern Hemisphere Christmases. I think I'm definitely in team Northern Hemisphere, although the caveat to that is that it definitely helps to have family associated with that. But then, yeah, the British pub is definitely one thing that turns the tide. I'm glad you're not working this Christmas. I hope you enjoy a Christmas without the pressure of work. And wherever you end up in the world, I hope your future Christmases are merry and happy. So thank you for joining us, Caitlin. And
Thank you, Guy. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a real pleasure. Made me feel more Christmassy.
Thank you.